listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
To episode 240 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week, you know, we will get round to what we've been up to, but the main story we want to talk about this week, you might think it's going to be a bit Nerds After Dark when we, you know, start talking about this, but we promise you it's not Nerds After Dark. But at the same time, it probably, you know, is a good thing that we're rated as explicit on iTunes for our subject today, which is talking about the upcoming porn block. Wow, that's coming to the UK in theory during April. Like, as if the stress of dealing with Brexit wasn't enough, soon it's going to be even more difficult to get hold of legitimate sources of online pornography.
No, not my smut.
Exactly. Yeah, so this is like the, God, it's like the tail end of a whole load of legislation and processes that probably kicked off around the time that Labour was last in government and has been kind of slowly building up into very stupid shit, basically, for years. It's kind of partly tied into the weird bans that happened for content of an adult nature. They got partially... well, pretty much reversed near the end of last year. There's like the content that were allowed on porn sites, which had caused a lot of controversy because it included quite consensual acts and also seemed to be extra discriminatory towards women and queer people. So it was like, lovely.
That was a big shock to me.
Yeah. But then out of all the stuff that's been similar on that, there's been a move to make it difficult for children and teenagers to access online pornography. And all of that, that side, the access issue, that certainly stems from, I believe it's an EU directive. It certainly was EU legislation of some sort, whether or not it's a directive or actual law. I think it's probably a directive, though, because of the fact that basically... every country in the EU was tasked with trying to make the internet safer for the nation's children.
And as part of the whole EU thing, it's, you know, once everyone, because the EU is a democracy, once the parliament passes it, it's up to the member states to, implement it as they see fit.
Exactly. So every other country in the European Union has, over the last, I don't know, it's probably more than 5 or 6 years now, has been working to implement their own legislation based off of this directive in order to decrease the exposure of children and teens to online pornography. Now, how this has ended up happening in the UK has actually been the most stringent, extreme application of fulfillment for this directive.
The most Tory.
Yeah, the most Tory. But at the same time, I do believe it kind of has stemmed a bit from Labour's initial actions, but the Tories really ran with it.
They kind of rammed it home. They just sort of wrestled it to the ground and just rammed that.
Yeah. And basically...
the legislation, that is.
That's the government decided back in 2017 that basically the final form everything would take is like a porn block on internet access in the UK. So basically any mainstream porn sites would have to, for UK visitors, put in an age ID verification system that's a bit more than saying, yes, I am 18 years old. And the various forms that this would take that's been agreed upon the last couple of years has been to basically have people hand over identifying information before they can access pornography. Yeah, like your passport number or driving license or bank card details. Another method being looked at is to have news agents, whatever, usually probably the kind that would also be selling skin mags anyway, to allow you to waltz up, show your ID, buy a single use, like, so you, access card thing to like prove that you're 18 when you use it, or over 18 obviously to use it when you sign into a site online, but it involves creating accounts to use sites like Pornhub and stuff. And yeah, okay, so personally identifiable information being tangled up with pornography access.
From what I've read, they're trying to use kind of a similar technology to cryptocurrency to try and, you know, make sure that people can't be identified and whatnot.
Or at least they're basically trying to encrypt things.
Yeah. Bitcoin.
Considering how well encryption's worked out for people, you know, and businesses and show for this, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, it's an area of personal information you really don't want to leave in the hands of business or even government. And considering that actually one of the main verification providers, who also happens to own most of the mainstream porn sites, is Pornhub's owner. Dear old, I'm just trying to find their name again.
It's Roger Pornhub, owner of Pornhub.
No, they're called, oh, what's it they're called? It's Age ID, the Age ID scheme, which is being run by MindGeek, which is the owner of multiple porn sites, including Pornhub. So it's like, oh, that's fantastic. And the thing is that it, I mean, I think we can all agree that children and teenagers should not be easily able to access porn. I think we can all agree
on
that.
That's pretty much a given.
I mean, that's always the argument, isn't it? It's like, do you want them to have easy access to porn? No.
Well, then, to be honest,
there are so many different ways that you can try to stop them, and also they'll know all the ways to get around these.
To be honest, it is a little bit bizarre how porn laws are like you have to be 18, but in order the age of consent is 16.
Yeah, but it's less confusing in countries like America.
Yeah, well, I'll say that they have their whole, you know.
I mean, to be fair, that like the states where sex toys aren't even properly legal anymore, there's a limit on how many you can have. So Texas is one of those.
Yeah, I wouldn't turn around and say that America is an example.
America is a really good example of weird shit when it comes to consent and marriage and legal ages and smut. It's just, oh, you are deeply weird. There are several states in the US where I just kind of side eye.
Yeah. But anyway, PornBlock essentially is coming April, unless of course some nonsense from Brexit messes things up. I don't know. It's not going to change the legislation involved with this and fulfilling the EU directive, because we'd have to opt out in post-Brexit proceedings of the directive that, you know, we'd have to actually actively choose not to do it. And considering the kind of government that we have in place at the moment, it's unlikely that they would reverse something like this. The thing is that whilst all of this has been going on, I mean, cooking along for years, several other things have happened in terms of internet access for smut and several other things, like ISPs over a certain size were pressured, or it might have become law, that they had to put in opt-in options for porn on their access services. So if you're a mobile phone provider with a 3G, 4G network, or if you're an internet service provider, your customers had to opt in to be allowed to go to adult sites through their connection. I remember when I switched to my current service provider, and I had to provide a copy of my driving license number and that in order to be able to say okay to adult content. But the thing is that those sorts of blocks, they don't just block adult content like porn. they block other things sometimes because the filtering systems in place still catch up things to do with like LGBTQ issues, stuff to do with birth control, you know, like unhelpful things to have blocked. Or in some cases, unfortunately, might filter out access to sites that help people to not commit suicide.
Yeah, it just, you know, the people who come up with these rules and the ideas, they always seem to think there's either an infinite number of workers who can help make sure that everything works absolutely fine, or there's a magic algorithm.
And if anything's taught us in the last couple of years is that algorithms are not to be trusted because they can fuck over democracy quite easily.
I mean, my favorite, when I first got on the net was, you know, all those skulls and such that were, you know, trying to use all the, the adult filters and, you know, the third party ones. And at least one prominent one stopped you Googling or, you know, using like InfoSeek or AltaVista for Scunthorpe. As one example, if you just break down the spelling of the first, like 5-6 letters on that. It's just that's how smart they were. They were just dumb word searches.
Yeah.
And yeah, it hasn't really moved on that far.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I remember from a few years back, and I thought it was a good idea. There was a move to have a .xxx domain.
Yes.
And I thought that was a good idea. It's like, go on, just make everything .xxx, and then if you can have that, you know, just that blocked if you're that way inclined.
But then the problem became that it was America leading that, and you had a whole load of countries not happy with the fact that it was America that was pushing for that. And I think it was also kind of threw up quite old tensions over how domain name policy is made and rolled out worldwide because of the American control there. I was just to say before.
I don't see how, cause I mean, obviously you can get basically the cookie that kind of gets put on your, you know, browser to kind of verify that you're over 18 or whatever. So what's to stop a kid from using a family PC to do that if the family PC has had that presumably from, like somebody who is over the age of 18? If you're, a 12-year-old and you've got an older brother that's like 18, 19, how's it going to determine whether it's a 12-year-old or the 18-year-old actually accessing it?
The discussion around it isn't quite clear at the moment, whether or not you're going to have to create login details in order to access porn sites if you're coming from certain countries, or if you're going to have to repeatedly enter in identifying information to check that you're over 18. So every time you want to wank, you better make sure your credit card's handy, or else you're not having that wank, at least not with porn. It's not clear. It's probably going to become an issue of cookies, maybe login. I think it really depends. And the thing is that nobody's quite ready for it yet. I mean, the BFI is meant to start the BBFC, there's the British Board of Film Classification, is meant to be starting to do classifications for films and stuff. And it's just like,
I think I've mentioned before how much of a very big fan I am of the BBFC.
Yeah, we're all fans of the BBFC. I mean, the BBFC managed to cut... I remember one of the... Because we had DVDs, legitimately DVDs at one point, of the new Le Blue Girl hentai kicking about. We bought it out of interest just to see... Because it was like...
We don't need to explain our kinks to people.
Oh, well, we just wanted to see what a legitimate hentai release with a BBFC rating would look like. And
I'll just say I've got... I think I've still got NTSC VHS copies of that. So,
yeah. I mean, that'd be the original 80s one. This was like a rebooty type thing. They tried to do in the early 2000s. And... it'd gone through film classification and stuff from the BBFC, and there was so much cut that the story didn't make that much sense because the, you know, like, plotty stuff did happen during the smuttier moments. And it was just like, and the whole thing was A, obviously not very titillating anyway after it'd been cut to shreds, but B, actually it made even less sense than it originally went. So I was like, what? What? I mean, conversely, so with the whole access thing, I mean, you've got people who obviously say that, oh, people shouldn't have access to pornography, that people working in the industry are, I mean, there's a lot, like, don't want to be there, it's not really consensual, blah, 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 and it's just kind of like, there's a lot of anti-sentiment to the whole thing that it's like, well, good, I'm glad this is happening, sort of thing. Regardless of whether or not it's going to protect children, because there will be, there are workarounds to everything they're proposing, and it starts with a V, has a P in it, and then there's an N.
I mean, well, one of the things which I think is interesting is that there's, it's not one of the main browsers, but it's not an unknown one. Hands up, verbal hands up here if you've heard of Opera
browser. Oh yes.
Yeah, that's got a VPN.
Yeah, but then China's just going to be selling your porn habits back to the UK government, I suspect, at that point.
It's actually a European VPN.
Oh, it's a European VPN.
Couldn't you just change your DNS settings on your server?
You'd also do that.
But, I mean, this
is why it's all such utter bollocks. The only people it's going to stop looking up, at porn or smut or suggestively shaped sand dunes. Hello, Tumblr.
Mm-hmm. Jensen Ackles' hands, because Tumblr thinks those are pornographic as well.
Yeah, it's
just that there might be on something.
What? What?
I've had seen gift sets of Jensen Ackles, like, either as Dean Winchester or at conventions, and there just happens to be very good footage of his hands, and it's been
just like, to have all this footage of women's feet, kind of thing. And it's like, oh, do you?
Mm-hmm. But I mean, not to get into too much dirty detail, or what, but when it comes to pornography, I don't like stuff being stored on my browser, so I'll go into incognito mode, and I think a lot of people do the same.
Yeah,
and I kind of can't see how you can have incognito mode and, age ID kind of working in conjunction, because obviously one's to make you anonymous, the other one's to make you not anonymous.
Yeah.
This whole thing, I mean, my issue has always been, as a species, we're only children for, if you want to take 18 as, the age, there you go, 18. Our lifespan is not 36. We're alive for quite a lot longer than that. So I've always found it very weird that we, try to tailor everything around, the formative, avoiding the formative years from seeing stuff, that once they get hormones, once they get horny, no security on the planet is going to defeat a horny teenager.
No.
I really want to rob some banks with some horny teenagers.
No,
now.
You don't. No, you don't. But what's interesting, last week...
you wouldn't get in the bank.
No. But there was a report released last week that suggested, released one that was doing the rounds in some on some news sites that was suggesting that the rate of erectile dysfunction in under 50s in the UK has increased a great deal at the same time as access to online pornography is increased. And in fact, medical persons and psychiatrists that are seeing erectile dysfunction issues in young men way more than they used to. And while no direct research has been done, that looks to be, or at least there's been some, but it's generally there looks to be a correlation between access to online pornography and erectile dysfunction issues, because of course the real experience of actually having sex is incredibly different to the to the depictions of sex in porn, and thus guys just can't get it up because the stimuli that they've come to expect around being aroused is just not there.
See, with that, I do wonder if it's that or if it's more, I should be able to, do this. So, therefore, it's kind of a, because I would say lots of men wouldn't go to the doctors about something like this because, they'd find it humiliating.
Yeah.
So, suddenly we there's Viagra available and, there's, various other things. So it's kind of a, I'll get something done about that. So it's always this causes that. It's correlation is not causation.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see if with access being curtailed, just whether or not it might have an impact on that, because then that would perhaps lead further credence to that. But again, there still hasn't been enough of a conversation with young people in the UK about healthy relationships and healthy sex. Like, sex ed classes in the UK are still only, and like personal development classes and all that, they're only just catching up to ideas around healthy bodies, healthy sex, healthy relationships, and LGBTQ stuff. And it's like, you've had hardly any generational chance for comprehensive sex and relationship education to even make a difference as the pace of technology continues to move rather quickly. Like, what's happening in the classroom has yet to have a chance to catch up what is happening with what's happening online. And it's like, I would have preferred to continue with comprehensive sex ed and relationships education in our schools from primary all the way through to the end of secondary, maybe even a bit in college, than just be like, oh, we've got to get rid of all the porn. We've got to stop people accessing all the porn. And because it'd be like, well, one, you'd have kids questioning what's healthy to be doing in the first place for themselves. And secondly, actually, there's also just not been a conversation about what the fucking hell are parents doing about porn access.
That is all, always my issue as well. It's just, couldn't the government, well, I don't know, maybe it's your fucking job to do that. Yeah. Maybe you could work out, maybe instead of calling Junior down from the room and saying, how do you set this password thing up again? Maybe you could pull your finger out and you could have learned that years ago.
And if you don't understand it, don't have it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we've made the argument, or I've certainly made the argument on this podcast before, that nobody lets kids, young teenagers, drive cars because it's kind of dangerous, and yet we give them phones, tablets, and computers that can access the internet and a whole raft of terrible, terrible things that aren't even porn. It's just a couple of clicks, like
Donald Trump's Twitter feed.
Exactly.
I find the implementation kind of interesting. Like, obviously, sites like
Pornhub,
RedTube, YouPorn, things like that. Those are obviously porn sites.
Yes.
What about like certain Tumblrs
Tumblr anymore.
But other sites which are not really porn, but they can be used as such, like, say, for example, Reddit.
And Twitter. They aren't affected by the ban. And so there will still be pornographic content on those sites. And actually,
considering those are more social media-y based, I would argue.
Yeah. And also, because nothing's been done, I think that young people trying to access porn, it will decrease, because actually, even though we sort of give credit to teens being quite determined to do stuff to deal with their horniness, there's still a huge chunk of them that aren't that technically minded.
By the same token, all it takes is for one bright pupil to, crack the code, and then all of a sudden the entire
school or something knows. Yeah. But then my other concern, considering that the government's done nothing about the use of devices by young persons. Like, I remember, it was more of a financial thing than trying to stop kids from accessing porn, but certainly in Germany, at least up to a point, I'm not sure if the law's still there, but if you were a teenager or a kid trying to make a expensive electronics purchase, you weren't allowed to do that. You had to have a parent or guardian there with you to enable the purchase to happen. You weren't allowed to spend money on something like that. So I don't understand why, in order to deal with all of this, and the fact that cyberbullying has become such a prevalent issue, why we haven't said, okay, well, kids, teenage, you know, you have to be 16 or 18 before you're allowed a smartphone or a tablet.
Like, well, a lot of the social media sites are supposed to be age-restricted anyway.
Exactly. So it's like, well, you could have a standard computer in the family home, like a laptop that's only allowed, which the parents kind of, you know, maybe have drilled into, but only allow them to use it in communal areas in the house. And suddenly a whole load of actual issues affecting Britain teenagers is suddenly kind of reported, and they just give the kids dumb phones. Dumb phones are still a thing if you're worried about keeping in touch and, you know, keep an eye on where they are and stuff. I mean,
but then how are you going to install that GPS tracker to, you know, keep an eye on where your youngin is?
And of course people would be like, oh, but, you know, like, oh, but kids will still get hold of them. And it's like, yes, but if there's actually law against under 18s or under 16s owning the things, like with tobacco law, like with alcohol law, if somebody like a police officer sees you in the street and you've got a device and you didn't look like of age and then you can't prove your age, gone. 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 And you, maybe, you know, parents might have to come to the police station to collect it. Or,
I mean, I'm just thinking here about, you know, parents actually taking responsibility.
Oh, yeah, this is the problem, yeah, it's parents taking responsibility, and this is how we've managed to get, like, my parents were incredibly trusting of me using a computer in the house before any of this was really an issue, and being online, I did wander into some places, not porn, but certainly chat rooms and stuff that I wish I hadn't wandered into, and then had the sense to wander the fuck back out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because there's only so many marriage offers from dubious persons that you can deal with in a short period of time. I mean,
yeah,
seriously.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, MSN chat rooms don't exist anymore. Like, Christ, those things were just appalling. I mean, MSN Messenger was appalling. It's just like, hey. But yeah, so I just feel like nothing's been done to do a proper educational process at all the groups affected to kind of just, you know, stop it. And the thing is that you could have had it so that parents, you know, agree to, yes, to their ISP. They'd be like, okay, yeah, do block adult content to the home. Okay, as we've said, the filters aren't ideal. It might block certain other sites. But then, like, if the parents wanted to view porn, well, there you go. There you then go and have, like, your own freaking phone or something that just happened. You use your 3G connection, look at some porn if you need to. I just feel like there's better ways it can be done. And the thing is that it can all be got around. You just VPN, DNS settings, whatever. So you're not in the UK, and you can look at all the porn you want without having to hand over personal information.
I mean, I've just thought of a few solutions here. You know, I was saying, you know, with dumb phones, you know, how are the parents going to install GPS trackers? And of course, the solution to that, or the solution and also downside, because it, you know, up one way and down another, is to take another Tory suggestion and just give them a knife that's equipped with a GPS tracker.
Oh, yes. Heard about that one the other week.
Yeah, where some genius Tory who definitely knew how GPS worked and how technology worked and probably has, you know, someone else tie his shoelaces, suggested that a way to stop knife crime would be to install GPS trackers in the handles of all knives.
When you can easily make a knife, I mean,
it's been happening in prisons for, you know, centuries. I mean,
but it's just so how are these magic GPS trackers going to get their signal? How are they going to keep a signal? How are they going to report where they are? So in other words, they're going to have like a data
creating
connection.
A false signal that sets them off.
Yeah,
on someone
yeah. It's just Jesus Christ, you moron! It's like the another Tory who suggested a few years back that the solution to pornography on the internet was for the internet to have a watershed so the explicit stuff could only be available after 9 p.m. And that's a real thing someone said that was in charge. They were actually in charge of, well, they were in a group which was in charge of deciding, you know, technical policy. Mm. It's just Jesus Christ.
I'm not waiting for that. I'm going to set my location to Australia.
Yeah.
It's just, people.
But, yeah. I mean, the thing, don't get me wrong, like, there is a lot of porn out there on the internet I don't agree with because it's dubious as to whether or not the people in it are fully consented to what's going on and it's not exploitative.
But then there's also pornography that you're not interested in because it doesn't tick your boxes.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, I actually am the worst person to talk about visual pornography because I actually don't like visual pornography pretty much at all. I don't actually seek it out. What was that?
Said weirdo.
I know, weirdo, right? And also, actually, a lot of pornography is made for different an audience difference to myself, and so it doesn't actually emphasize anything that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So it's like, whatever, you know. But it's just, my issue is with the government trying to take control of something like this, which is quite personal. B, that there's identifiable information mixed up with it. Mm. And then obviously what's happening with that identifiable information, which will be passed through private businesses. And God knows if it all gets fucked up, maybe the government starts getting their hands on it, or it can be used. It's a way to potentially use what are technically legally acceptable kinks, depending on who gets hold of information, against people so that it's used to blackmail and stuff.
Well, legally acceptable kinks for now.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, because as the porn ban for several acts showed, like...
Yeah, I mean, what happens if they suddenly decide tomorrow, so face-sitting is now banned. Now, every person that's searched for face-sitting since we've had this database created, we're sticking on the list and we're going through one by one and arresting them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just there's far too much scope because the thing is, you know, the whole identity cards, blah blah blah, you know, why would you trust a European government, as in a European member state, before and over it, but not the UK one? And it's just, well, look how the UK government has repeatedly fucked people over. Look at the way that they have collected information that they've said that they wouldn't. Look how they've, you know, given the police, powers which they should never have had, you know, with, sleeping with protesters.
Well, you say powers, it's more just allowing it to happen in the first place.
Yeah, it's just, that's fine. Just go ahead, do it. Is it right? No, but we've decided that we're doing it, so therefore it is. And it's I don't trust the government class, for want of a better term, in the UK to have our best interest in the heart and not to have its own purient interests creep in and for it to abuse the information that it would get from such systems as this.
Now, let us consider for a moment what it would have been like if the government had put this much effort into trying to get the porn block sorted to stop the blocking and, unfortunately, censorship, but fortunately also censorship, of materials that have, you know, led to the radicalization of youths and their exploitation in various circumstances that I don't wish to name because it's a sore and painful subject for various groups at the moment. It's like... But also, one word we haven't mentioned in all of this? Dark web. What happens if, in order for people to get their fix, and because they don't want to hand over personal information, they start going onto the dark web to get content, which is even worse because that is quite often definitely not going to be legal or more likely to be incredibly extreme and of incredibly dubious origin. Or torrents.
It's just, oh God. The whole thing is utterly ludicrous. It's like...
It's a complete misunderstanding of how the internet actually works.
And how porn habits work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, remember a few years ago when, it was one of those sad cases where, you know, there had been an abduction and there had been a murder. And one of the newspapers, probably the Daily Hail, said, oh, the murderer looked at porn. And he's like, oh my God, no. Did he also breathe oxygen and have a television? We'd best ban those things as well. And they and everyone was, oh, you know, we should get Google to ban this. And it's just you're thinking, the way that person's talking, the way that MP is talking, do they seriously think Google runs the internet?
There's actually one thing I have noticed. I'm not sure if it's because I have safe search mode turned on with Google, but certainly before when previously, if I started searching stuff, that because I'll see like a term that's clearly like porn related, but it's like urban slang, and I'm like, okay, I kind of want to know what this is without seeing what this is, because I really don't want to see what it is, but I'll happily read what it is.
There are some times when I've been searching for something that's perfectly safe and not at all smutty, and I put the search in and Google image search, and it's like, whoa, I did not know that was related.
But the thing is that Google is actually, it doesn't tend to bring up autocomplete now for sex related stuff. That's something that's happened certainly in the last few years, I think. And conversely, over in the US, you've got two legislative acts that have caused the porn scene over there to change. And they were related. Was it, we've talked about in the Tumblr episode, is it Foster and Setter?
Yeah.
Laws that obviously to stop human trafficking. And that's affected things, and that's one of the things that Tumblr acted upon in its massive purge. Keep in mind that apparently Tumblr's lost about a third of its traffic since the purge happened in December.
Yeah, it's like cheerio.
Which is surprising, like you'd think it'd be more, but give it time. Maybe some people haven't realised it yet. But yeah, it's, I don't fully agree with porn unless it's like you can definitely prove it's been consensually made. Like that's a big thing for me. But there's a lot of clips.
There's got to be like a level of, because you cannot guarantee.
But
the whole thing I will say, I think that in a way it has been massively inflated as a danger, because most of the sites, the big ones like Pornhub, they seem to be very fast at taking down content, which gets red flagged. And most of the smut that seems to be on there is from the companies themselves, where they will, post up, like an edited down thing, and then they'll say, oh, get the full length episode of this, from blah, blah, blah. And most of the other porn sites, which are popular, more or less link back. I would say that it's going to be very difficult to find stuff which, is dubious.
Yeah, but then it's the mainstream sites that are going to be easily found and affected by what I say found. Obviously, something like Pornhub, they've got their own thing. Their parent company's got their own thing. They're going to roll out a thing in the UK once it's appropriate to do so in terms of the law. But it's illegitimate sites, dark web, torrents, and that.
It's just
that
good luck.
That's just on the basis of people circumventing the system. Yeah. What happens if the system is hacked? I mean, time and time again, we've had it where, you've in good faith given over your details, only to find out that they've had a breach and your details have been stolen along with millions of other people.
I look forward to this. We've turned it over to a new company, one that we trust with security. It's Yahoo. And everyone would just, I might as well just burn my computer now. Wouldn't, I am, Hugo Sanchez, and I live in Bolivia. Because everything is now going to be public. Because a lot of these big companies, they're not only awful at technology and keeping everything secure, but they're even worse at letting people know.
Yeah.
When they've been circumvented and hacked.
There's also an angle that we haven't considered, and that forget the kinks, just if you've got interest, say you're queer, and you're looking at online porn, and then suddenly there is going to be an even more identifiable record of what you've been looking at, and that gets found out by members of your community who aren't very pro-queer, you're at even more risk of repercussions to such an information leak.
I mean, all you need to do is have a moral panic.
Yeah.
And, well, you're seeing it with the TERFs, where they're banging on about, oh, we're only thinking of the children. And some of that rhetoric is creeping back into the, you know, LGB coverage, yeah. I've noticed, where it's, we must think of and protect the children. It's just, really? I've lived through this shit in the 80s. I mean, it was fucking awful then.
The stupid thing is, though, that they've lived through that shit on the other side of the mirror.
Yeah.
They know exactly what it's like to be, you know, kind of persecuted on the basis of, oh, you're turning kids gay or whatnot.
Yeah.
Such a terrible, terrible thing.
Yeah, it's such utter bullshit. All you need is someone to, you know, really panic over, you know, this, that, or the other. And all of a sudden, it's either a repressive regime's or, you know, repressive government's wet dream and blackmailers' wet dream. Because if they hack into a database and, oh my God, these databases are going to get hacked.
Yeah.
They're going to get targeted. You know, all these things, it's like, yes, you know, the teenagers are going to get past it if they really want to. And if they don't know or, you know, can't work out, they'll get a friend to, or they'll go around to their mate Dave.
They'll steal their parents' credit card or something.
Yeah, or they'll find worse illegitimate sources.
Yeah, it's just that. So that's not going to help on that angle. And there's going to be a record of all this, you know, this stuff on the other angle. And that record, you know, those records are going to get, you know, they're going to come out. So it's just, to me, it's a countdown until the first public official or businessman, you know, has to, you know, fight a legal case because, you know, someone is trying to blackmail them.
Yeah. Meanwhile, let's consider for a moment, go back to the parenting angle a minute. I think one thing that's particularly telling, and it has nothing at this point to do with porn, but the amount of discussions and the amount I've witnessed when little kiddo has a tablet and they're watching or doing whatever the fuck they want on that tablet for an hour or hours on end, or whilst they're in a restaurant in the middle of the public, and just keep them all nice and quiet. And then as soon as you take away that device from them, they start screaming. I think it's evidence enough that perhaps parents in the last, well, almost decade, because I mean, tablets became a thing, what, like maybe 2010 or 11?
Like, yeah, last decade is.
Yeah, like parents have been relying even more on technology to nanny the kids.
Pacify
the kids. Yeah,
I think they always have. It's a more portable version of the.
It's a more portable version, but it's also a more portable and dangerous version. It's the equivalent of like. Oh no! It's just.
Well, I mean, with TV traditionally, you had basically videotapes and you had TV signal.
Yeah.
Both of those, completely, you know, under your control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tablets now.
Unless you've set up
very
stuff,
very much less so.
Unless you've bothered to configure things quite a lot, but I think if you can't do that, if you can't take the steps necessary, if you can't do the equivalent of seatbelting your kid in a car with the technology that you give them to use, then you shouldn't be giving them that technology. Like, if the seatbelt doesn't work on your for the kid's seat, child's seat, whatever, like, you don't put them in the car. You do not take them on a journey. The equivalent is the same with hardware and software. If you can't work that kit to keep your kids safe, to keep your teenagers safe, then you shouldn't be providing them with it in the first place.
Yeah. It's maddening that there are parents I know, there are parents who I personally know, who were complaining about, you know, things on YouTube, and then if I've said to them, well, you've got YouTube kids, and they will say, what's that? And in my head, I'm screaming, your responsibility. That's what it is. It's you know, you can control what they put on, you know, their device. You can also control, you know, with either, you know, more complicated settings like DNS settings or, you know, router settings, things like that. You know, you can control what they can see, and then you complain when you don't bother. It's all a rich tapestry of I just despair about people in general.
And if you don't know how to do it, there are professionals in your local community who can pay to sort these things out for you.
And can I just say that those you know, professionals, yeah, please pay, and that includes, you know, people who are like from family, friends.
Yeah.
If you know, we've all been asked around, could you set up, you know, little Bob Junior's, you know, sit and such? And you, well, give me, you know, pay me then. Especially because I know I'm going to keep having to go back again and again and again after either they or you have broken something again that I've told you not to do, but you've done it anyway.
I mean, it's
almost like that was informed by, you know, specific instances in my head.
Okay, I'm going to be for someone now.
Best.
I think if we can do a round of what people have been up to. Cool. What you been up to?
I've been on Pornhub. No, I kid.
Oh, yeah.
To be honest, I think a lot of YouTube still. I'm very much, yeah, kind of, I do like quite a bit of YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because it's, you know, kind of more interesting and more relevant and more up to date, and yeah, a lot of it can be entertaining.
What was that adaptive that one that looked at the Resident Evil games versus the movies that we saw earlier?
Oh yes, that one.
What was it called? Was it adaptive?
Oh yeah, I can't remember exactly, but.
Something.
Yeah, basically kind of looking at different times when video games have been adapted to either TV series or series of films. And in this one that we watched, it was basically about the Resident Evil films and why the Resident Evil films fail totally, which should be pretty obvious for most people.
What, from seeing them?
Yes, and comparing it to the game series, because obviously the game series is kind of... you know, kind of changed quite a bit by itself, not always in the best ways, but you know, in a lot of different ways. And yeah, it kind of detailed just kind of the story and creative decisions from the films that are just like, okay, I realize that you're referencing the source material here, but you're referencing in a way that is actually quite lazy and kind of dismissive of the people that would get the references.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which is quite, you know, like, okay, basically just kind of taking the source material and recycling it in a bad way rather than using it as a homage or, you know, using it in, just in a better way in general. I've also been going on YouTube for a lot of kind of doctor kind of stuff recently. So, I think it's Dr. Mike, who's kind of a YouTuber stroke doctor, who's actually quite entertaining to watch. Lots of you know, kind of advice and explanations on there. Sometimes he kind of plays stuff like Surgeon Simulator and whatnot.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So that's quite fun. That's quite funny. There's a couple of different like video game kind of fails type ones that I watch as well. There's lots of SciShow stuff from like Hank Green and whatnot.
SciShow is good.
Yeah. Just trying to think. There's obviously lots of woodworking videos from time to time, so it varies kind of greatly as to kind of.
I feel like your varied tastes there are evidence that there needs to be a better way to organize subscriptions on YouTube.
Yes, you should be able to basically come up with your own kind of sorting your subscriptions into kind of folders or groups.
Or genres.
Or genres and whatnot. I have like video games ones, I have like design ones, I have tutorial based ones, I have science based ones, pop culture based ones, woodworking ones, music ones, you know, kind of all sorts of different kind of channels and whatnot. And it basically, it's just like a long list
of subscriptions.
Yeah.
That with no context because it's just the names.
Yeah. So sometimes you kind of scroll through and it's like, why am I subscribed to this? I've not seen a video from them for, like, I don't know, 2 years or whatnot. Let's go on it. Oh, it's that dude that created that actually decent video that one time. Okay.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah. It's infuriating because I've got... Let me have a look. Let me see how many subscriptions Paul has. Now, it won't actually give me a number because it's a stupid piece of shit with an awful interface. But let's see. Hang on. It doesn't actually tell me how many subscriptions I have. But a lot. You know the scroll bar at the side?
Yeah.
I probably... Let's see. How many times do I have to scroll it down? One, two... 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So I have 11 pages of channels on the side.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's hell to try and keep track of things.
And another genre of videos that I've like we binge watched the other night, video after video after video.
Oh God, no.
Yes, that's no. Right.
No.
That's right. Basically, driving mistakes ones, or driving fails.
Dash cams.
Dash cam footage. Type
oh,
stuff.
God.
It's painful.
Yeah, but what's the most painful thing is kind of sitting there analysing what people are doing, and people always assume when they upload a dash cam video that the other person is the stupid moron that is, you know, obviously doing... you know, crappy stuff wrong, and they're, you know, driving perfectly fine.
Answer, they're not. More than 50% of the time.
Yeah, usually it's like, right, okay, so the footage shows that the other person has just actually managed to reach that mini roundabout just before you. You haven't bothered slowing down, and suddenly you have to stick on the brakes, and then you beep your horn and shout your mouth off.
Yeah, and on someone else's YouTube channel, there's the other dashcam video going, look at this arsehole.
Or you've got people emerging from junctions which are well ahead of the person recording the dashcam footage. Like, you have time to react.
Yeah.
Like, okay, like, it's not ideal when people pull out in front of you, but you've got enough time a lot of the time to actually do something about the situation that is developing. Like, you know, all that stuff that happens on the hazard perception test as part of your theory and hazard perception testing before you can take your actual driving test. People seem to not bother with...
You've made me slow down by 5 miles per hour. I'm going to beat my horn at you and then chase you down the road.
So, the situation was developing ahead of you. Like, you're meant to look, you know, you're meant to react ahead of time, but you're not meant to leave it last minute to slam your anchors on and hope that you don't slide into the back of them.
Or you know, like being on the roundabout and having another car going, I'm in the wrong lane. I'll indicate a moment, then trying to actually merge into your lane and you're beeping your head off.
Because you've not bothered to react to the fact that they've taken a moment to indicate that they need to change lanes.
Yeah. They're trying to fix a mistake. You're basically just ignoring that completely and kind of having a go at them for making the mistake in the first place.
I mean, we have seen where the driver that's being recorded has definitely committed the wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Dash cam owners are quite often in the wrong themselves. Anyway, I think we should move on from that particular form of hell.
So, let's see.
I think that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah, but... I mean, I have been doing other stuff other than YouTube, but mostly YouTube, I'd say.
Oh, House.
Oh, yeah, House. we've still getting through House. I mean,
we're on season six. Yeah, finally.
You know, you kind of listen to, you know, us prat on week after week after week. When you're watching like a series of, like, say for example, House usually has around like 22 episodes, apart from season four, obviously. And there's eight seasons. You're not going to get through it in a week, so, you know.
But if you're trying to do other things with your life.
No. So, kind of bear with us. We're still watching through, you know. I mean, it's like Supernatural trying getting through that in a week. I don't think you could, even if you didn't take
it. I was
going to
say, do not set Emily that challenge.
Don't. And also, don't any of you do it, because you could make yourself ill. There's that much.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Retro, what have you been up to?
So, well, I too have been watching YouTube. Mine has mostly been repair videos and there's a bloke in LA who repairs old TVs, and I like watching his videos because it's genuinely just there's I can't see a real reason other than, you know, a very specialized market or these TVs being repaired, you know, like 1950s portable black and white, or, you know, that. Or like, you know, color TVs, but they're from the 60s and the tube is round. Oh. It is round, not rounded. It is round.
Wow.
And they're cool because everything's, you know, vacuum tubes and, you know, stuff like that. So it's interesting watching him, you know, go through all these and say whether, you know, this can be saved or not, or, you know, what's causing this or that. But yeah, so, you know, watch those. There's Modern Vintage Gamer, which I've linked, you know, a few times in the Nerds, you know, DM group. Mm. He does, interesting videos. You know, obviously, you know, retro gaming, you know, people. But let's see. Other than that, we've been watching Steven Universe. I may have mentioned this. We have now finished it.
What they've got on Netflix, or finished it all up to date with
every single episode that they have made so far.
Oh wow!
And it's ended on a cliffhanger.
They are making more, aren't they?
Oh, they're making more, and it's you know, the new series is coming out this year. But yeah, it's just. Noise. it is very good, and yeah, just the kind of thing that they're coming up with. You know, I mentioned the last time that I think there's kind of an anime influence to it.
Okay.
Because it's the, you know, the 10-minute episodes, and, you know, they can be, you know, like two episodes per TV appearance, you know, that kind of thing. Rebecca Sugar, kind of the creator of the, you know, and main writer, kind of reinforced that because one of the characters ends up, one of the sort of background characters ends up on the other side of the galaxy, captaining a ship. And he ends up wearing, have either of you heard of Captain Harlock?
No.
I'm pretty sure if you've been anywhere near anime circles in the last, in like 10, 20 years, you will have seen a design of Captain Harlock's, kind of, you know, Captain Space Captain outfit.
Hmm.
And yeah, Lars, the character, is basically wearing a Captain Harlock outfit. And it is just, aha! So, you know, little references to things like that. And, oh God, one of the new characters which is on his ship. Because I've mentioned there are different types of gems.
Yes.
And they have different you know, assigned functions. Like there's sapphire. And they are generally you know, they can predict the future and probabilities. So they're used for, you know, planning. Well, the gems that Lars has running on his ship, they're all the defective gems. So again, no subtext at all in Steven Universe. So it's all the gems who are outcasts, and one of them is a defective sapphire who can only say, or, you know, can only tell you what's recently happened. So instead of a character who, you know, who can foresee everything, you know, just as it's about to happen, she'll be there, and you know, they'll be push that button, and there'll be an explosion, and this sapphire will say, "Lally's going to press the wrong button." Yeah, and little things like that, and it's just, oh, you're just charmingly crap. But yeah, there's all sorts of things that have gone on, and basically, if you lot haven't seen what's on Netflix, there is no point in me saying what's happening, because it's massive spoilers years in the future. But trust me, it is worth watching, because it develops into a series which, I think it's an excellent little series, and it's definitely got things going on in it which, you know, the young'uns can watch it, but I do wonder how they'll have reacted to some of this, you know, this latest season, because to me it seems to be outgrowing its time slot.
Because as in the stories are grander and stuff.
The stories are grander. There are stories are definitely grander. And I'll just say, things like pink diamond, white diamond. That's all I'm saying. But the stuff going on, which, is, you know, for a kid's series, it's a bit... and it had a gay wedding episode.
Hmm.
Did I mention that last time? I'm trying to keep track.
I didn't think so.
But yeah, long and short, there's a character who is a combination of two gems. And they're, you know, they're a fusion, which I've mentioned before.
Yeah.
But... they've spent thousands of years fused as one character. And, you know, the idea is that when they're fused, they're not two characters. They are, you know, they are the one character. They are a combination.
Hmm.
So they are truly a different character. So when they unfuse, and there are things that happen which cause the two gems to go their different ways. And it's like, you know, to them, they've always been together. They've been fused because they felt like they needed to. But now they, you know, they realize that they want to. So you have two female gems, because all the gems are female, and they have a wedding. And it's nice. And yeah, I'm watching this and I'm thinking, this is supposed to be a kid series, but you do have a gay wedding here. Including a character who has rainbow hair. Not saying there's an agenda. There is definitely an agenda, and there is definitely a subtext to it, and it is a good series. You should watch it!
Huh.
It's fine. You don't have to watch it, but you should, and I will judge you harshly if you do not.
Does that go to all of our listeners as well?
Oh, yes. Everyone should watch Steven Universe, especially anyone on the LGBTQ spectrum. I think there are things that are going on in the series which you will definitely get something out of. Anyway, so been watching Steven Universe. We started watching because our beloved Virgin Internet decided to crap itself. So we lost not only internet, but we lost TV service as well a few nights back.
Oh my!
So we're going, oh my God, what are we going to do? Are we actually going to watch a
DVD? Savages.
No. Oh, physical medium. But one thing we'd been recommended, which was Jodskott, which is a Swedish series which was shown on ITV a year or two back. And it's okay, we'll give this a watch, and we're currently about two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the first series. I don't actually know if anything beyond the first series has been on UK TV. Because I decided to look it up, and oh, there are three seasons on Swedish TV. But yeah, I'm only aware of it ever being on TV over here once. So I think it was ITV's dabbling into the Scandi TV series.
Mm.
And it's a story of a cop whose daughter is taken, goes missing, drowns 7 years ago.
Right.
And she returns home when her father dies, to the big house, because he's the head of a like a, you know, a felling, tree felling forestry company. And there are all kinds of weird shit going on. Because there's a little boy that goes missing almost 7 years to the day. To her daughter going missing. And then in the first episode, as she's driving home after the, you know, well, this, you know, this is all a bit weird, all this happening in this, you know, in my hometown that I, you know, I left years ago. She nearly runs over a girl who's standing in what looks like just a nightdress in the middle of the road. And she's convinced it's her daughter. But we're not quite sure yet if she is or not. And as the series goes on, there's all kinds of other things going on. We thought it was just going to be like a, you know, Scandi-noir crime drama, as you know, we've seen before, like, you know, The Bridge and The Killing.
Mm.
But there are other things going on. Like there are characters saying, you know, your father broke his deal with the woods. You cannot anger nature because nature will take its revenge. And there seems to be weird things in the woods, weird things in the water. And there's definitely agendas going on with some of the characters. And I don't want to say anything more, but yeah, I've been watching Yob Scott, and it is good. It's also available on DVD from ITV.
Emily?
What have I been up to?
Yeah.
Oh, and I will just, yes, was that a comment?
No.
Sorry?
But,
well, that was about.
We also, yes, well, that's what I meant, comment. Okay. We got to see Captain Marvel, and it is good.
Yay!
Yeah!
And it has led me to listening some of the 90s music that, I was a fan of at the time, but it's like, oh yeah, let's just listen to some 90s music again.
Okay, I have been up to things. I finished watching the first season of Homeland. I was surprised by how the season ended. Kind of.
They all died.
I've held off watching on season two. I do plan to watch it, but I was just like, what? How? What? And then I actually went and what's the name of the actor from White Collar?
Matt Bomer.
That's the one that plays the main character. Yeah, yeah, Matt Bomer. So I heard that Matt Bomer was going to be in The Sinner. Season 3, which in the UK is available on Netflix. I don't know if it's truly a Netflix like original exclusive thing or if it's just something they've picked up or whatever. Yeah, so in the UK it's on Netflix. So I checked out season 1 just to see what it was like. So it's got Bill Pullman in it as like one of the main characters.
All right.
Which was like, okay, I'll watch it. And it's a crime show, so you know, I watch crime shows that aren't too formulaic, or at least I try to. I mean, I obviously gave up on Criminal Minds and Elementary.
Yeah, because it's not Sherlock. It's yeah. Another thing. That,
yeah. But yeah, so I watched the first season of Sinner, The Sinner, and it was interesting because it was like dealing with cults and stuff, and you know, weird kooky local communities that aren't kooky necessarily on the surface, but you dig deep down and oh.
So not David Lynch style, like Twin Peaks.
It reminded me a little bit of Twin Peaks, but it wasn't as abstract. What I did get from it a little bit, and it was completely unintentional on their part, there's no way they referenced it, was that it actually felt more like Deadly Premonition than it did Twin Peaks, which is weird, because obviously Deadly Premonition is the result of love for Twin Peaks by Sweary. So it's just kind of like, yeah, it reminded me more of Deadly Premonition than it did of Twin Peaks. But still not as, you know, similar as Eva could have been. I've been reading a lot. I managed to pick up The Shining again. In terms of, because most people remember the film more than anything else, but certainly in terms of point in the story, shit's about to go down is the point that's been reached. It's all there on the cusp of all going terribly, terribly deadly. Pete Tong or deadly. I also started reading for research reasons. The Silk Roads by Peter Frankopan. It's like it's an alternative historical look at the at the Silk Road its historical significance and how it shaped a lot of culture and things, and how actually it was incredibly important before basically Western Europe managed to suddenly find routes to the New World.
Yeah.
And around, obviously, the Horn of Africa, actually, as well. So I've been reading that. I finally finished. Summer Night, which is a Dresden Files novel. I'd stretched out reading that one. I'd been on like the last, according to my Kindle, 10% for a while. And it ended quite spectacularly. There was quite a lot of epic battleness going on, basically, at the end of that one. And then I already had the next book, which is, I think, Death Masks, on my Kindle. So I've started reading that already, and I'm already hooked. But yeah, I really like the Dresden Files series. And I haven't ever seen the TV series adaptation. But I feel like having read, because obviously when the adaptation happened, there weren't actually that many books out.
Yeah.
In fact, it might have only been the first one. But I think now, with the number of books that are actually out in the series, it would be a lot easier to do an adaptation that works, because there's a lot more material to go on and a lot more characterization readily available.
Yeah.
So I know people have never been particularly positive about the Dresden Files TV series.
I've seen bits of it, but yeah.
And then the two other things I've been up to. I'm doing Camp NaNoWriMo in April, which is like National Novel Writing Month, and it's run by the people that run National Novel Writing Month. Only unlike the November event, you get to choose your work camp for the month. And you can change it until a certain point within a month, and then it's locked down. Basically, you set your own writing goal, and you have like a little sort of like cabin with fellow writers. Now, either you can join like a public one or something, or you can create one of your own. And I've created a cabin with a couple of people. And if you wish to find yourself some words in April, you're welcome to join us. It's just a couple of people that follow me on Twitter currently in there. But basically it's kind of like, you sort of like with the cabin, you're meant to sort of like talk and like motivate each other and stuff and talk about how you do or ask questions for like help and stuff. So it's quite cool. But Camp NaNoWriMo like properly kicks off on the 1st of April. I've set myself a lofty goal of 30,000 words of original fiction. So that's going to be fun. But because of that, I've been doing research, which is what the Silk Road ties in there, and the fact that I've been making copious notes. It's been a while since I've done world building, and basically I've been doing like a facts list, like facts about the main location that probably will never get mentioned in any real detail in the story, but I know now, so that in my head at least I know what everything's like, and then if I do subtle exposition around them, then it's quite cool, and I don't need to worry about how the economy works, because I've already figured that out. Because that that was a thing that was bothering me. Like, I'd never really, because I'm used to writing stuff that's kind of set in our own world. It's because you don't have to worry about the economy, because the economy is the economy. But it's set up my own fictional world. And actually, there's been a few fictional worlds, but I've been like, how does anyone make any money? Like, Game of Thrones, or Song of Ice and Fire, the novels, it's like, okay, cool, Castle Rock's got a lot of fucking money. Apart from loads of people and like flipping bits of the kingdom owing them money, they would have had to have started from a resource originally. What was the resource? Because they don't have the massive gardens and wine production like Dawn. Dawn's got good exportable goods, high quality exportable goods from which to make its wealth.
Like a new event.
Yeah.
if anyone gets a reference.
Yeah. But then you've got like rest of the like Seven Kingdoms and that, and you're like, what are they like? They make enough food to feed themselves and pay some tax, but what are they exporting exactly? You know, in order for their wealth and shit to actually be a thing in the first place. Like, that bothers me, that you don't actually know what the economy is based on, or what at least what the trade goods for areas are. So that, you know, it's worthwhile. So I've pinned down details like that for my notes. So I'm doing that. And then finally, I've been experimenting with knitting hats. People who follow me may have seen some yellow and black creations.
Yes.
I'm going to buy some more of the same wool because I've pretty much run out of it at this point. So that I've almost perfected this hat. There's no pattern. It's just me figuring out flipping maths for knitting, basically, trying to make this design. And then ideally, once I've got my ideal hat, I might have to figure out how to do patch embroidery. So you make your own little patch. Because obviously with such a stripy yellow and black design, really what it needs is a Save the Bees patch. But every patch that I've tried to find online has been pretty much like 5 inches across. So about sort of like 9, 10, 11 centimeters or something. It's like, that's a bit too bloody big to put on the side of a hat.
Hmm.
You know, it's kind of like patch and optional hat at that point.
just sort of sew up one side.
Yeah.
Got a hat.
Basically, so I might actually have to make something. It's either that or I use pins, but I don't really want to put pins in it. Because there's definitely certainly pins and badges that are the right size that have the correct message, which is obviously Save the Bees, because that's important. But yeah. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. I think that's all we've got time for this episode. If you have strong feelings about any of the content discussed in this episode...
We don't. We're all fine.
Yeah. I mean, if you're British and you're not happy with what the government's doing, in theory, you've always got the option to write to your MP, put out the flaws to them and stuff. But, I mean, this stuff's coming and...
Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that aren't.
Yeah. There's not really much to do about
was it. Was that just an offhand comment?
Maybe. If you actually don't know how to tighten down online security on your devices and home network in order to keep your kids and teens safe, worth talking to your local computer shop, local phone shop.
Local tech buddy.
If you talk to a buddy, at least offer them a decent selection of beverages. Maybe alcoholic if they like that. If it's Retroid, he obviously likes cider. So, you know.
Fruity cider. Yeah.
If it's us, beer or cider works, but we're not going to do tech support for anyone other than our family. Because that's what we already deal with. If yeah, so if there's anything you want to comment on, or if you've actually figured out how the hell any of this is really going to work, also, welcome to let us know, because, I mean, the government doesn't know.
Government doesn't know.
I mean, they certainly don't understand what they've just done, so...
And I don't think they ever will.
Yeah, they certainly won't. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blueton, on Twitter's at Paul Blue.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. If you want to join my camp, Remo cabin, just send me a tweet on Twitter and I can talk to you about it. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher. You can tweet, the podcast at Nerds Podcast, and we're also on Instagram as Nerds Podcast, and we're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And that's it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.